Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happened?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons?
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
There was a ton of suspense in the last episode we recorded because we were getting emails about screeners and wondering if we were going to get to go to the... premiere.
Yeah, and we just got back from the premiere tonight. We decided to... roll right into the episode after right. consuming more than our fair share of delicious soft-baked cookies in the gift bag we were given on the way out.
Oh, man, those soft-baked cookies. I never wanted to stop eating them.
We got to give a free plug to Fleur Etzel, right? Fleur Etzel?
Fleur Etzel, I guess, is a fancy bakery somewhere in L.A.
Here's what we should do for the open. I posted a picture of us. The only picture we were allowed to take from the event got posted both to @GreatestTrek on Twitter and @GreatestTrek on Instagram. The most popular photo we've ever posted to Instagram, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. Really, people really enjoyed it. And I think one of the reasons that people really enjoyed it was they want to know what this stuff is like. What's it like to go to these events? And I want to share what that was like because I think it was a really unique experience we had tonight.
Yeah, it was. It was, it's different from your pandemic premieres, which is how we experienced Lower Decks the first time around. Mm-hmm. It was a really like high spec Zoom experience, basically.
Right.
And this time we went to the studio lot. We went to...
It was the CBS lot in Studio City.
The CBS lot. Okay. Yeah. All these lots, I mean, I know it's terrible to say, but they all look the same to me.
We were relieved to both get invitations. And I mean, what's fun about... an invitation to a thing like this is that it's so regular for so many people and it is very unique to me right now because like I had the sort of stress that was like the LA stress of, well, where am I going to park? Hey, idiot, you're parking on the lot. Like, like you're going through the gate. You're telling them who you are. You get pointed in the direction of where you want to park and there's a golf cart waiting for you to drive you to the screening. It's great.
They essentially built LA around these lots. So they anticipated the need for parking spaces. The golf cart took us a hilariously short distance from the parking at the front of the lot to where the party was, and it was a block party. They sectioned off a like fake suburban street, like a bunch of false house fronts that I guess they shoot like. We were trying to come up with what sitcom has used these houses as like the establishing shot of the family home, and we couldn't really pull it, but we were like Googling different sitcoms and trying to like see what the houses look like to see if we could figure out which one was which.
Yeah, this Studio City lot had that that real mix of sound stages that look like airplane hangars, the office buildings that you see in a lot of studio lots, and this weird suburban cul-de-sac area where there were like 100 white Adirondack chairs arranged next to some couches, and they had like some food trucks there,
and an
open bar, which was fun, and like all of the food and drinks had fun Star Trek-y names. Like they thought about everything. It was neat.
There was a Romulan Ale Fizz at this that was a blue drink. That was the blue drink. You got to have a blue drink at a Star Trek event.
You do.
This was the Romulan Ale Fizz, and it was a gin-based cocktail, which stunned me because we got sent ingredients for a whiskey-based cocktail that was called the Romulan Ale something when the Lower Decks premiered the first time.
they had these claw game machines set up in several areas where every player is a winner.
Yeah. You and I both got laughs out of Phil Lamar, who was waiting in line behind us to play the claw game.
Uh-huh.
I told him I'd pumped $300 in quarters into the machine and it wasn't worth it for just a t-shirt.
It was great.
it's a real fun experience to see somebody that you've seen be hilarious on TV for years and years and years and just like give them a little aside and get a laugh out of them like that.
Totally. The same thing happened to me in the line for a drink. Jerry O'Connell's like right behind me, glad handing and backslapping.
Come on, guys. What do you say? Tomcat's bet.
And then I kind of turn around and notice him, and he notices me, and he's like, hey, man, thanks for coming to my party. Really appreciate it. Like, big, sturdy handshake. And I'm like, hey, thanks for having us all over to your houses. And then I gestured broadly to all of the fake houses in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, it's really hard to keep up with the upkeep on all of these babies, but really glad you made it. So it was fun to do bits with him. He was, like, a delight to be around. He was clearly, like, circulating and...
Yeah.
The whole cast was there, minus Jack Quaid, I think. Like the primary cast, I would say.
Yeah, he said, I think they said he was shooting something in Canada right now.
Probably The Boys.
Oh, yeah. Mike McMahon got up and gave. I feel like he didn't really want to introduce season two, but he saw that there was still kind of a line getting processed at the bar, and he wanted to like. He wanted to like stretch until everybody got served a drink so that by the time
we were responsible for that. We were like the last people in the bar line. And poor Mike McMahon was like, I guess I got to stretch the taffy so these fucking Star Trek podcasters can finally like stop drinking all the free booze.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't feel bad about it. I wanted a beverage to consume while I was enjoying my free Star Trek cartoon.
So Mike introduced it, and we took our seats right in front of a giant screen that was extremely bright. Yeah. And I've done like event IMAG camera stuff for years, and I feel like there has been a leap in quality to how these screens look. I was blown away. Like,
yeah,
not to be a nitpicker, but the brightness of these nits was bonkers.
It was bonkers. It was... I would say the second episode, I hope this isn't a spoiler, but the second episode had a lot of flashes in it, and they were so bright that they were actually kind of hurting my eyes. Because we were also in like the second row.
Mm-hmm.
So, the couches were for the cast. They had like really fancy couches for the cast and Adirondack chairs for everyone else. Everybody that... took a seat, got a free Lower Decks themed blanket.
Yeah.
And we probably could have taken those throw pillows too, but I didn't really want a Star Trek throw pillow.
I didn't think they were branded. I just thought they were regular throw pillows. Oh. I didn't notice a thing on them. So that's why I left mine behind. But I took everything that wasn't nailed down. and the cookies and milk on the way out the door in the gift bag. It was really cool. The whole experience was great.
Yeah. It was awesome. I wish we hadn't gotten dinner before because it looked like those food trucks were really solid business.
I know.
It was also great to see our buddy Ben Fritz, who is a great friend of The Greatest Discovery. He got you into the premiere of Star Trek Discovery back when we didn't even know what was coming toward us, new Trek-wise.
Season one.
Yeah.
I think that might have been one of the first times I met Ben Fritz in person.
Yeah.
Was that hang. And now we've become good friends.
Yeah, and he's kind of our buddy at these events. It's always nice to see him.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Adam, I think the cookies are digesting. I'm worried about coming off my sugar high from all of those cookies. So I want to kind of get into the episode here.
I've got plenty of fuel, both from the Kirk's cucumber margaritas I had at the premiere and also these three cookies. I'm ready to get into Star Trek Lower Decks Season 2, Episode 1, Drink Every Time You Hear the Phrase Strange Energies.
So we open on a Cardassian prison asteroid, and we can tell it's Cardassian because there's lots of galore class starships hanging around in this spooky asteroid field. Very moody open, and we come to an interrogation chamber where Mariner has like a pillowcase on her head, and Cardassian interlocutor is preparing to torture her.
Ready to talk?
Yes.
One of the things about regular Star Trek that Lower Decks has made me appreciate is in a scene like this, where you see the visual context of Cardassia or Cardassian adjacent base
right.
through light.
Mm-hmm.
And like the joke of the four lights is definitely a part of this scene, but also like by lighting it differently through animation, you're able to gather that sense of space so easily.
Yeah.
They really do a nice job with that. And the same was for the DS9 set that they did in season one
right.
and a few others. Like your sense of place is totally grounded.
It really is. And this scene winds up with Mariner kicking her ass and breaking her way out. I love the subtle detail of what she's wearing, because I think that until the reveal of the joke is made, you could just mistake it for Starfleet Black Ops uniform.
Yeah.
But that's not what it is. She's busting out of jail. She's got this Cardassian lady, you know, she's got like, she's using her as a hostage and shooting people on her way out. And they pass Boimler in a hallway, and he is in his DS9, late DS9 / First Contact uniform. He's got his extra pip. He's got, he's been shackled to a wall. He's complaining about all the lights they keep showing him. And she refers to him as a hologram and says that she's still mad at him for betraying her and leaving and not even saying goodbye.
It's one of the subtle aspects about the whole scene that reveal drip by drip that it is a holodeck program before Jennifer shows up.
What do you want, Jennifer?
Ugh, what are you doing?
It's such a funny scene because like before the arch appears, I'm like, man, like she's really like using this jailbreak as an opportunity for some like self-reflection and it's like therapy as jailbreak. And then when you realize it's actually jailbreak as workout, you're like, oh.
This is a show that's super healthy about its depiction of therapy and mental health. And I mean, it gets pretty close to drawing an equivalency between interrogation and and talk therapy. Do you ever feel that way?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
do you ever feel like it's really drawn out of you?
My therapist does have, four lights up on the ceiling behind her. So.
I love the Miranda class starship that they escape in.
Yeah. Did you see the name?
I did. The McDuff. As in Kieran McDuff.
Executive Officer, Commander Kieran McDuff.
Of the TNG episode I was grounded for and had to listen to on a radio.
Right.
When I saw the Miranda class, and this is a class that most people will recognize as like the Reliant class starship of Wrath of Khan.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that while I prefer the Del Sol class, like the modern Nebula class starships of the TNG era, that's my ship.
Yeah.
I kind of think the Miranda's hotter. The Miranda is like the CRX to the Nebula class's Del Sol. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
I dig it a whole lot.
I feel like it's also partly just that we're seeing, like, it's a recency bias thing, and we're seeing it in this animation style. And I would love to see a Del Sol show up in this show.
That's fair.
For that reason.
But you see so many ships in the background as they escape up this tunnel. Like they attack a Tick.
Yeah. Interesting to think that the Ticks might still be part of the Cardassian fleet.
Yeah, and as they rise through, you get the sense that maybe this is just today's escape ship. And different workouts require different ships for escape for Mariner.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, this is a really strong open to this season, I feel like, because so many questions were swirling in my head at the end of the last season about what it was going to look like this season if Mariner was, you know, on team her mom in mm-hmm. a way that she... you know, she was sneaking around last season, and now the big secret is out, and this really like both kind of addresses that and also plays with all of my expectations of that for comedy mm-hmm. in a way that I just think is really smart and funny.
Yeah.
One little tweak to the opening credit sequence, the pack-led super ships are now a part of that Borg-Romulan space battle scene. That seemed to be the only big change that they made.
Yeah, it kind of suggests that they are going to be a greater concern this year.
Yeah.
Though I guess the Romulans weren't a massive deal in season one of Lower Decks. They were a part of a couple of episodes, but...
Yeah. I noticed that Fred Tatasciore's credit is still in that sequence, though.
I don't care if he's not in any of season two. I think Shax was such a great character.
It's like a basketball jersey that gets retired in the rafters.
Credit emeritus is what I'm saying. Like, keep it going forever.
It became personal with me.
So we come back and we're in orbit around a planet, and Mariner is in her mom's ready room going through Captain's trinkets and suggesting that she... would like to get a lot of post-karma on r/power washer porn. and this is a second contact mission. This is a planet that has joined the Federation or has like been contacted but hasn't cleaned up their cities in the wake of their industrial revolution. She'd like to put a little spit shine on this capital city. Show them what they could have.
It's a scene that really tells us what the conflict is and then shows us what the conflict is, because Freeman's log is like, ugh, working with my daughter, not as great as advertised. it like covers that elliptical ground between the finale of season one and the premiere of season two.
Yeah.
And not only do we hear what a pain it's been for her, we see that pain in this scene and we see Mariner getting her way.
Yeah,
because she wants this side mission and Freeman grants it, and it's at the cost of noticing her XO, who's been in the room the whole time. Ransom is just sort of waiting for her to cross a T and dot an I before he can leave.
Sorry, Commander, I forgot you were there.
Then he sort of like slumps his shoulders and walks away. You can tell by his posture that he's just not enjoying this new hierarchy.
Ass kissing has really given way to resentment for him. Yeah. And the fact that he is not the captain's main concern anymore is really grating on him.
All you have to do with the drawing of Ransom is make him less erect, right? Because the Ransom of season one was always like chest out.
Chest out, hips forward, marching, putting a foot up on a thing.
Yeah, but even just drawing him... As a regularly postured person, like mm-hmm. you can tell something's off with him.
Yeah, if he was walking around like Adam, for example, you would be able to tell that that was a sad Ransom.
Adam equals sad Ransom, for sure.
That's the math.
In the bunks, we run into Tandy and Rutherford, who has had his head appliance reattached.
This was a thing that I forgot was in the trailers, that Rutherford does not look different in season two than he did in season one.
Yeah, like no upgrade to the head appliance either. It looks like the same gear he's always had.
Still a Vulcan model. So he's got a pointy ear on one side.
He's still even dating the same girl. He's got a date with Ensign Barnes, the Trill character voiced by Jess McKenna at night.
And it's been going really well. Unlike last season, he's actually like pursuing a relationship with her. And Tendi thinks that something is up. She feels like something has changed about him since he got his head appliance reattached. Now he likes pears. That doesn't make any sense to her.
She's feeling a great amount of friendship envy, I think. The sort of envy that I think is natural for friends to feel when one of them pairs off with a special person, you know?
Yeah. I keep wondering whether the Rutherford Tendi thing is being steered in a romantic direction, because I feel like every time I expected it to be because sexual tension or because romantic jealousy in last season, that always got snatched away and explained as a friendship thing. And there seems to be continuity from season to season on that at this point.
It does play with our expectations, because for time immemorial, Orion meant fuck. And in every scene that Tendi is in, that is not part of the subtext of her character.
It is not my whole thing.
Unless it's like such deep subtext that they are like not going to show it to us as text for a long time, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it feels like she isn't being real with herself about something, because she has decided that Rutherford is suffering from SMD, which is a disease that cyborgs have that causes their personalities to change and then eventually their brains to leak out their noses.
Sounds pretty gross.
Sounds like one of the grossest diseases that you can imagine, and the animation in her iPad really confirms that.
On the planet surface, we get to meet these Ambrogosians, and like part of the administration that the Cerritos is there to do is like connect these people with their subspace communications number. This is an interesting bit of trivia to think about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like Starfleet does first contact, and they just sort of establish all the things that first contact does. But then if you were to join the Federation,
yeah,
you have got to do a lot of, it's like moving to a new neighborhood, right? Like you need an address and you need to know how to pay your utilities and stuff. And the subspace communications number is part of it.
There's so much just bureaucracy that you got to do. And these are very numerically sensitive aliens. The guy that is their leader doesn't want to just pick any number. I mean, this reminds me of, you know, when I was a teenager and I went to the cell phone store with my dad, and we got a cell phone for my dad, a cell phone for my mom, and a cell phone for me. And we got three numbers, and he was like, well, let's give the cool one to your mom. And I was like, but I'm a teenager. I need a cool number.
What is a cool number even though?
I mean, of the three, there was one that seemed cool to me at the time, and that's my phone number to this day.
Wow.
I feel like it's like my, it's almost like my AOL screen name, if that stuck with me. Like the thing I chose when I was 15.
I remember friends telling me after they got their cell phones that like, yeah, I asked for a number that was easy to remember.
Yeah.
And sure as shit, like they got a really cool punchy number with a bunch of repetitive numerals in them.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't think to ask that. I got whatever fucking number I was given, and yeah, I've been stuck with it forever.
Your phone number sucks, Adam.
It really does. It's not a cool number.
And we'll just give it out now. It's...
So Ransom is down there doing this bit of business, and this is the last straw for him, because he asks Mariner for help and Mariner blows him off for this power washing job.
Yeah. And Ransom's number two, Lieutenant Stevens, is like all of the ass kiss that Ransom used to have as part of his personality has been rarefied and thrust into the character of Stevens. So anytime Mariner is not doing something that Ransom wants him to, Stevens is there to pick up the slack to try and get Ransom's good graces.
I would say Stevens is recognizable as a that guy from season one.
Nothing like a cold beer after a smooth second contact.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
But really had no backstory at all. Like they've really bulked him up this episode.
Well, he also just like looks like the drawing of the chief engineer character played by Paul Scheer, whose name escapes me at the moment, even though I remember making him my Edward Larkin last time we had a conversation about him.
Right.
So they are they're doing the real mission. Mariner takes her power washer and starts cleaning up one of these buildings. It's a gray grubby facade, and as she power washes it, a beautiful mural is revealed, and the Abergosians are shocked that they live in a city that could be beautiful.
I mean, did you put together whale mural and Ambergrosians as the wordplay there? I kind of did, but that's as far as my mind got with it.
Mm.
I don't know if there's a third thing.
Yeah. Are they meant to be whale barf people?
I don't know. Do you know what ambergris looks like? Does it look orange the way these people look?
I don't know. I'm going to look it up right now while we're here talking. No, it just looks like brown and gross.
Okay.
It just looks like what it is, barf.
There you go. So Mariner starts cleaning the buildings, and what happens here is she appears to have turned on something that may be solar powered.
Mm.
Like by cleaning off the gunk, stuff starts to activate.
Uh-oh, I made a clean spot here.
The first appearance of strange energies appears,
right.
and these energies take Ransom down.
Yeah, he kind of jumps in front of the strange energy bullet because he's trying to get Mariner out of the way, and this gives him some he's like KO'd, his shirt rips open in a sexy way initially. Yeah. But then he's like hovering and his eyes are glowing and he's really like whipping up a storm. He seems to have control over the climate of this planet. And he's real cranky. He's mad at Mariner. He's mad at the captain. He's mad at Dr. Katz.
Her name is Dr. Tana.
I love how Dr. Katz kind of tells the captain and the viewer that if you want to know more about what's happening here, you can watch an episode of the original series.
Yeah.
That has to do with Gary Mitchell. But like,
she's like, if there's ever an off season again, the greatest discovery will be reviewing ..
Yeah. But I love how seeing that episode is not compulsory to understanding what's happening here.
Because what's happening here, all we need to know is that Ransom has been given godlike powers by whatever this building / device was that Mariner accidentally opened up. And now he's like using entire trees to work his delts.
I love how when Ransom becomes godlike and could probably do anything he wants to do, he still has to get in some reps.
Yeah. I wondered what it would have been like if he hadn't gotten there in time and Mariner had taken on the strange energy.
Right.
I wonder
right.
if they considered that in breaking the story, or if she had to be kind of like present and herself for the, you know, the mommy issues stuff to get worked out.
I mean, I feel like the conflict between Ransom and Freeman to come was already done between Mariner and Freeman toward the end of season one. Like,
right.
like it built up slowly and then came to a head in the climax for the last episode in a way that feels very similar in this moment, but could possibly be derivative.
Yeah.
Given what happened between mother and daughter last season. We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that. Being ourselves in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one size fits all on a social media platform, or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second, go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
So the stakes get raised in up on the ship because Captain Freeman gets a FaceTime in her ready room from Admiral Freeman, who is also a parent of Mariners. And he tells her, like, the PACLED thing went so well recently that she's been considered for getting commissioned on a capital ship, which would be a big promotion for her. And so, you know, she doesn't want to screw this up. She doesn't want the second contact mission with the Abragosians to be a embarrassment with the godhead of her first officer killing everyone or whatever.
This is the squeeze, right? Because it reveals that Captain Freeman is a cog in the Starfleet machine just like anyone else.
Right.
And feeling the pressure of best behavior and not letting someone who's ranked above her know how she's struggling.
And she's like such a careerist, and it's such an uncomfortable position because the person below her that's causing her the most grief is her daughter, and the person above her that she is trying to curry favor with professionally is her husband.
Yeah, it's tough.
That's a tough position to be in. But he can't play favorites. He's an admiral, you know? They're talking in an official capacity right now.
Admirals always do things the right way.
It's never nubbin motivated.
No.
This gives her the motivation to really, you know, take the fight to God Ransom. But meanwhile, down in the place where the lower decks hang out, Tendi is putting a bunch of electrodes on Rutherford. This episode, maybe more than any other episode of Lower Decks, does some great stuff with the comedy of the B story not giving a shit about what's going on with the A story.
Yeah.
And I think this is the first good moment of that. Like, she's just like shocking Rutherford and trying to like change his mind about whether pears are good or not.
Do you still like pears?
Yes. You volunteered, didn't you?
Yeah, but I didn't know you were going to be giving me electric shocks.
And it's kind of feels like a Voight-Kampff test that she's administering at one point.
Right.
And he fails and is so cheesed off at how much she's hurting him that he just kind of like tells her to take a hike and goes off to enjoy his date.
I like how Rutherford's written, and I always have, because he presents as a real pushover, do good.
Yeah.
But time and time again, like, he sticks up for himself. You can be nice and have a backbone, and that's Rutherford.
Totally. An admirable quality. I wish I could stick up for myself like this.
We get our first appearance of a medical rifle that Tendi assembles at the end of this scene, which I love the idea of.
Maybe my biggest laugh in the episode was when she opens that and starts putting together the rifle out of pieces.
Yeah. Back on the planet, Ransom has continued to demonstrate himself as a being of pure ego. Mm. Maybe one of the biggest ways of proving this is that he creates a race of Ransomites by waving his hand over the Abragosians and turning them into his own image.
Do me, sir!
A conflict breaks out here, which is that Mariner wants to shoot him with the power washing ray, and the captain wants to reason with him and do like Starfleet diplomacy type stuff. Dr. Katz is a fucking badass. She just like hops on his leg and is about to hypo spray him, but he turns the hypo spray into an ice cream cone and then like turns his clothes into like a Mortal Kombat character. You know, the Mariner like tries to shoot him. This does not go well, Enterprise.
I like this foreshadowing here, and this happens a lot in Star Trek Lower Decks. Like, Mariner wants to do a thing. Freeman wants to do a thing. Freeman is proven right by the end.
Mm-hmm. He makes his head really big. That goes and floats up into space and becomes the primary source of conflict for the ship while his headless body keeps hanging around down on the planet, you know, turning mountains into Mount Ransom Moors and turning all of the, like, you know, municipal art in this city into workout equipment.
He just ruined our museum of popular music.
Hey, that sounds like something you don't need.
I love it. It's so great. And then his ransom clones just start using the workout gear.
Yeah. Speaking of great, is Rutherford's date. It's going awesome.
Yeah.
Until Tendi walks in and starts licking shots in the atmosphere with her medical gun, trying to shoot medical venom at him.
Barnes is so cool that, like, this doesn't faze her at all. She's got plans to go swimming later, and nothing is going to get in the way of those plans. Rutherford can come if he wants to.
There is a moment where Rutherford is, like, fleeing from Tendi down a hallway and just throws away the line, "I just want to go swimming with girls."
Yeah.
I really laughed at.
I really feel seen by Rutherford there. What happens a lot in Star Trek is like the ship shoots at a thing and it only makes that thing stronger. And that's what happens when the Cerrito shoots at Ransom's head.
Yeah.
He loves this shit.
It makes him want to eat the Cerritos. He starts treating the Cerritos like a smash burger.
I love the animation of like where his hands go in relation to the saucer section.
Like warping the force field of the shields as he bites into it.
It's really great. And as Rutherford and Tendi continue to argue, Ransom's head is in the background outside the windows. And this is like a visual interplay that is just so funny. Like, it's much funnier than how it could be described, these two storylines working simultaneously.
Yeah, like the extent to which Tendi and Rutherford do not care about the giant Ransom head floating around in the window outside.
Yeah.
Their showdown. And this comes to a head. Tendi admits that this disease that she has diagnosed him with is kind of just a pretext for her to see if she can fix whatever is changing his personality, because she's worried that if his personality changes too much, she might not be his friend anymore, which would be really sad.
Rutherford reassures her that that's never going to happen and they're always going to be friends. So chill the fuck out.
Yeah. Take it down a notch, Tendi.
There are no notches being taken down between Ransom Head and the Cerritos, because we start to hear some of the gripes, some of the totally valid gripes that Ransom Head has about how things are going on the Cerritos, because he doesn't like working with Mariner and resents having to because of the nepotism, right?
Yeah, he was second in command and now he's kind of not. He feels like he is qualified to be a captain. And what Captain Freeman realizes is that, like, stroking the parts of his ego that have been bruised by recent developments on the ship is kind of distracting Ransom Head and making him a little bit less violent toward them. And so she's like, oh, like, this is the solution. This is the simplistic solution to this problem. I'll just I'll stroke, 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 and then he will stop trying to eat us.
One of the things I liked about the first season most was how great of a office work allegory Lower Decks is. And this is the moment in this episode that I found extremely familiar. Like, the epiphany that a managerial figure has in, like, oh, I could just be cool.
Yeah.
And things would get better around here. Like, all she has to do is be nice.
Right.
And God Jack, loves it.
Except for then he kind of takes it too far, which is also a part of that allegory, like the employee that thinks he deserves a promotion getting a little too much praise can really go sideways.
You need the happy medium. Like, you can neutralize caustic cynicism with praise, but you can also, with too much praise, create a giant-headed monster.
Right. And the only way to really take the piss out of that giant-headed monster is by ball shots. And so that's what Mariner has struck on down on the planet. She's just repeatedly groin kicking the disembedded body of Commander Ransom, and the head like recedes down to the planet's surface, reattaches. His Mortal Kombat uniform goes away, and he has like a big rainbow barf on the ground. This doesn't quite cure him of it, but it's gotten most of the strange energy out of him. She has to ball shot him like 5 or 6 more times before it's totally out.
A few more ball shots than you normally get in a Star Trek episode, I'd say.
Yeah.
There was a shot here that I wanted to call attention to, which is during one of the ball shots, Ransom's head flies back and kind of breaks the visual format of the show, much like... Like, you remember when South Park went from purely 2D to, like, a 45-degree angle sometimes? And it would be, like, visually spectacular when they did that.
Right.
There's an angle that Ransom's head takes post-ball shot that evokes that feeling here.
Right.
That I thought was really cool, and his head is drawn in such a specific way.
Yeah.
Into a monster!
Back and to the left.
Because it's all jaw when his head tilts back, and you can really get a sense of that jawline.
I just love that moment, and it goes by in a flash, but I definitely wanted to call attention to it.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the show that's going to really scrutinize the ball shot continuity in moments like this. That's the Greatest Generation, Greatest Discovery promise.
Listen, we know there are a lot of Lower Decks podcasts out there. We know there are a lot of new Trek podcasts out there in general, and Lower Decks podcasts in particular, some of which have stolen their names from things we said. But this is the one where you're going to get the closest, most detailed attention to what's happening to balls.
Mariner gets out of the way just in time for Dr. Katz to drop a boulder on Ransom's body. And then everything goes back to normal. The moon's back.
Yeah.
The Mount Ransom Moor's gone. All the buildings are back to normal. All the Ransom people are restored. I imagine the gym's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder, because he also moved all of those monuments and things. I wonder if they stop being gym equipment, but stay where he moved them to, which could be its own headache. But anyways, back on the ship, they are warping away, and, Ransom is going to recover. He's going to be just fine. And the captain and Mariner kind of download what happened and talk about maybe this, like, Mariner being the captain's sidekick situation is not such a great arrangement. And also, maybe Mariner should think about it in the brig.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if anything is really going to structurally change in their relationship. They can say it.
Yeah.
But until it's backed up with any sort of action, like, you just don't know.
Yeah. What do you think the charge is that Mariner goes to the brig on? Because, I mean, she did have dispensation from the captain to go down and do the power washing, right?
It seems like if Mariner is sent to the brig for what she did, Ransom should go to death row in the brig.
I mean, this is Starfleet. Like, if Picard did Wolf 359, I think that and got to keep being captain of the D, Ransom is going to be just fine.
Yeah, I guess so.
You get the sense that Mariner is like kind of used to coming down to the brig, though, because she's got like her little like check marks on the wall, and she's hanging out with Rutherford and Tendi, and they talk about Boimes. They talk about how much they miss him, but how much he's probably doing the thing he loves the most over there on the USS Titan, and that's a smash cut too.
Yeah, aboard the Titan, they're under attack by a swarm of ships. And I mean, the contrast between the panic of a Boimler and the relishing of the moment by a Riker comes to a point when I think as the ship enters this wormhole and everyone gets warped, you hear Riker say, "I love my job."
Very funny line. I love the like writing of Riker like the therapist in the last season, like working in food references all the time, Riker working in jazz references all the time.
I read an interview with Frakes, and I mean, it could have been a person from the press, but I also feel like anyone could just walk up to Jonathan Frakes and ask him questions, and like you'd get this kind of candor from him.
No way.
But the article I read seemed to suggest that the Riker of Lower Decks is a brand new construction by Mike McMahon. Like Frakes is comfortable with the idea of the character being teased out in this way.
Yeah.
In a way that may be like a very different character.
Yeah.
In a way that he's comfortable with. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, like ransom, but really good, basically.
Did you miss Boimler when we cut to him? I kind of did. It was fun to be back over there.
It was fun to be back over there. And it was... I love the idea that it's just terrifying to be on the Titan. Like, I don't really know... I'm sure if I'd read more of the books, I would understand the reputation of the Titan a little bit better. And... we did that novelization, the book on tape for the off season that was, you know, largely set aboard the Titan.
Yeah.
But like, I guess there's a type of Star Trek fan that really like knows all about that right. chapter in Frakes' life, and I wonder if the Titan as terrifying ship of war is like, because it seems like their primary mission is like just getting into firefights with packleds at this point.
I really feel like Boimler needs to be where he is after season one, because I think the character ran out of shit to do, and when you're a try-hard character,
yeah,
I think there are only so many ways to depict that, and so by cutting him off from his friends and setting him apart, I think that is just a great choice going forward in season two. And I really wonder how long he's going to be over there. And I'm hoping it's as long as possible. I think it's going to do nothing but improve the possibilities for his character and the storytelling here.
Think of all the fun adventures he's going on.
Anyways, why don't we get on to our assessment of the episode on the whole? Did you like this episode?
Yeah, I really did. I think it continues to be my favorite of the new Star Treks. It's just, it delights me, especially with how efficient it is. It's such a short episode every time, and its hit rate is still so strong.
Yeah.
The activity of being in a audience to watch it and to laugh with a bunch of people was just a great experience. It's as close as I've been to seeing something in a movie theater, even though like we were, you know, outside in Adirondack chairs. Like it made me miss being around people consuming a thing for entertainment.
Yeah.
And what a great thing to have watched for that reason. I think Lower Decks is just so much fun. And this first episode of season two was really great.
You know, this episode really starts with a bang, like a great cold open, and I like the way it resolves at the end. I think like maybe the middle part of the episode dragged a little bit for me. Maybe there were like one too many beats back and forth between the planet and the ship or something like that. And I wasn't familiar with the like Gary Mitchell story or whatever. Like I haven't seen that episode of TOS, or if I have, it's been a really long time. So some of the references were lost on me, but overall, I really enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, I will say I didn't care if Rutherford was or wasn't okay.
Yeah.
And I don't know to what extent I was supposed to. Like, is that a deficiency of the episode, or is that how it was as intended?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that it's... yeah, like, I was kind of annoyed at Tendi after a while. Just like... This isn't like Rutherford is being cool as hell and you're being annoying as fuck. Just lay off. And
right.
The motivations of the characters in that B story was a little like wishy-washy, but
There is sort of a compounding effect, though, right? Is Rutherford as O'Brien, as recipient of torture, is a thing that is happening on lower decks and is not happening to Tendi, to the degree that, like, I feel like we need to put Tendi in more danger or something that equalized the Tendi and Rutherford dynamic. Because you're right, it makes me like Tendi less when I don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that that's a character that I'm looking for season two to explore a lot more, because I felt like she was the least of the four in season one. All right, well, do you want to get into our priority one inbox and see what we've got in there, Adam?
Yeah, let's head over.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secure channel.
Adam, our first priority one message is from Ramon LP4, and it's to Ben and Adam, off-season suggestions.
All right.
Man, this is terrible timing, Ramon LP4.
Yeah, if only this came 2 months before this.
Yeah. One, TGG Measure of a Man. Get meta and review an episode of your show. Two, Incubus, His Eyes Uncovered. Watch the Shatner Esperanto film without subtitles and review it in Temerian.
Oh, no.
Three, Canar with Picard. Create unique cocktails for the TV/film roles of Patrick Stewart.
All right.
Four, The Sheer Effing Hubris. Review your film school projects.
No way.
Five, oh, fuck it. Let's just do a Quark's Bar with Faith Saley.
Hell yeah. That's the winner. That's the best idea of all of them.
That is a great idea. You really saved the best for last, Ramon LP4.
Yeah,
I hope we get to do all of these. I mean, I pray that my student films never see the light of day and nobody ever gets to watch them. But
you know, a great way to ensure that, Ben, is taking a cordless drill to those hard drives.
You know, my Baron Vaughn, the stand-up comedian, was the star of my student film. He's the only thing in the movie that is any good.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Baron Vaughn's awesome. Baron Vaughn is so much better than your movie or most things.
He really outclassed the hell out of the whole proceedings. Uh-huh. He's also just like Baron, the Baron Vaughn you see on stage is the Baron Vaughn you meet in real life. Like, he has like so much personality. And then, like, when he's not doing that, he's like asleep. He's either going at like 1,000 miles an hour or 0 miles an hour. There's no in between.
Yeah, that is not me. I envy that quality.
Yeah.
I hope we continue to keep Faith Saley in the greatest podcast ecosystem. She's just a delight.
Yeah.
And totally game for whatever. A Quark's Bar with her any day.
Any day of the week, mon frere.
Ben, our second priority one message is from Matt L, and it is to Ben, Adam, and the FOD. The message goes like this: Ben and Adam, or Adam and Ben, thanks for the show. Have you listened to Gates McFadden Investigates Who Do You Think You Are? I know the colon is usually a bad sign, but I think the Friends of DeSoto might get a kick out of it. Dr. Crusher interviews Wesley, LaForge, Will, Data, Worf. It's been a fun listen. Love you. So Matt L snuck into our personal priority ones with what reads like a commercial priority one message. Matt L.
Yeah.
Shilling for Gates McFadden.
If we find out that Matt L. has a financial stake in Investigates Who Do You Think You Are podcast, I think we're gonna have a problem here. But
I think what we have here is a Matt L. McFadden. I think that's what's happening.
I actually have not gotten a chance to listen to that yet. One of the like weird ironies about being a podcaster for my job is that so much of my day is spent like editing or working on text things that are related to the podcast that I just don't have as much free time that like an audio program could be happening during as I used to. And so I have listened to less and less podcasts over the last few years.
And also, their people and our people talked about a possible interview, and she turned us down. So I'm not holding a grudge or anything, but like, you know, I'm a grudge holder, Ben.
Wow. Wow. Brutal. My feelings remain unhurt. The door remains open, and I want to give that show a fair shake. She's a busy woman. She's Star Trek royalty, and we're just chuds scraping the bottom of the barrel.
We're the biggest Star Trek podcast in the world, man. That's what I'm saying.
She's also new to podcasting. That may not be clear to her yet.
Maybe we can help her out.
I mean, the official podcast came around. We did a promo swap with them, and that was great for both of us.
It was. Peaceful coexistence.
Yeah.
Ben, that's what I'm after.
A rising tide raises all Star Trek podcasts.
It's true. We're all friends.
Yeah.
All of us.
Everybody is friends over here. Anyways, if you'd like to get a Priority One message, I'm looking at a wide open calendar for future episodes of The Greatest Discovery, so get him in. It's MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself an Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin! Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and give it to post-Operation Rutherford, because Tendi does get her grubby mitts on his brains in a beat we don't actually get on screen. Mm-hmm. She fixes the thing that was making him enjoy pears. And he says, fuck pears toward the end of the episode. And I want to say, fuck Rutherford. Pears are great.
It's not Rutherford's fault, though, because he loved pears and that was his true feeling. And he got his brain scrubbed in another direction. This is not his fault. And I don't believe it's his true opinion. He's been programmed into hating pears.
Programmed into hating pears, but also, sorry, Rutherford, you lost me. If you've been programmed into hating pears, we can't be buddies anymore.
Pears rule.
Pears rule. Rutherford drools.
I tell you what, though, I never eat a pear like an apple the way Rutherford does. I always cut it off the core.
Yeah, you get a lot more enjoyment from a pear if you slice it up.
Little slices.
Yeah.
That's what I like.
Maybe poach it in some brandy, like a Frenchman.
That's too much work.
Adam, did you have an Edward Larkin?
God Ransom is one of the purest expressions of Edward Larkin.
Yeah.
Right? Edward Larkin, you could argue, in his episode of Short Treks, achieved this sort of godlike feeling for himself. I find the similarities astounding between them. And I personally just want to say that I love that Jack Ransom, once given God power, continues to just be afflicted with the issues that he had as a non-god. Like he had every reason and opportunity to let those things go, and he just couldn't.
Just totally preoccupied.
He could go on and have a happy life as a god, but just could not let go of his gripes. And so I definitely appreciate the A story that Ransom's given here right off the bat.
Yeah.
Because it feels like Ransom was underserved as a character in season one. I like coming out of the gate and giving him a big story in season two.
Mm-hmm.
And on a personal level,
just
really like my time with Jerry O'Connell.
Yeah.
I feel like we really hit it off there.
Yeah. You and Jerry O'Connell might be best friends now.
We're friendly. He invited me over to his houses. I went to his houses party.
Yeah. Yeah. Adam Pranica, close personal friend of Jerry O'Connell.
Yeah, working on it.
Mm-hmm.
So Ransom's my Edward Larkin.
What do we have coming up next week, Adam?
Oh, you know, it's the second episode of season two of Lower Decks, Ben.
You're right about that, Adam. It's episode two of season two. It's Kayshan, His Eyes Open.
Mm.
We've already seen it. We saw it earlier tonight.
It's fucking great.
It's very good. It's got some good voice talent brought to bear on Kayshan, His Eyes Open.
It's true.
And
yeah, you're really going to love it, I think. You're going to recognize some of these voices for sure if you like listening to podcasts.
Yeah. So that'll be the thing we review next week. And possibly we'll just roll right into it tonight. I mean, who knows? Who knows where the night will take us, Adam?
Yeah, I'm fueled on these cookies, these cookies and margs.
I might chase those cookies with some blue drinks.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine what's happening in my tome right now? Cookies and margs.
Cookies and margs.
I better take a brood is what I need to do.
Shrimp cocktail, chimichangas.
Yeah, the whole thing.
I watched Adam just house a plate of mini chimichangas before we went to the screening, so.
Yeah, and guess who held it together?
Yeah.
This guy.
A feat of strength to rival the kinds of shit I do to myself when we're on tour.
Adam is healing.
All right, well, I'm really looking forward to it. Now there will be some credits.
The Greatest Discovery is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. Thanks to Paramount Plus for inviting us to the Lower Decks premiere party. Our apologies to Mike McMahon for taking too long in that line at the bar. You can see a picture of me and Ben at the Lower Decks premiere party on our Greatest Trek Twitter and Instagram accounts. Those handles are at Greatest Trek. Those accounts are a regular source of fun. Thanks to Bill Tilley, our social media director. Today's episode of The Greatest Discovery kicks off season 2 of Lower Decks and a run of weekly episodes about new Star Trek shows that might not ever end. It's a good thing The Greatest Discovery is audience supported, because we couldn't make it without those who support The Greatest Discovery on a monthly subscription style basis. You can join them by going to MaximumFun.org/join. Thanks to Adam Ragusea, who made our theme and interstitial music. When he's not making music for us, he's making food on his wildly popular YouTube channel for his literal millions of subscribers. Fans of the show call themselves Friends of DeSoto, and you can make friends with them at the many fan-created communities on Discord at DrunkShimoda.com, Facebook, Reddit, and everywhere else social media happens. We'll be back next week for episode 2 of the second season of Lower Decks, and we hope to see you here with us next time on The Greatest Discovery.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.